When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Great to have you with us, Magic fans, for another episode of Magic Pod Squad. This time, we have the opportunity to catch up with the Magic legend, Rashard Lewis, who helped get this team to the 2009 NBA Finals. Magic fans, the Florida Department of Transportation reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. If you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Instead, find a sober driver or catch a ride service. Remember, drive sober or get pulled over. Have a great night and drive safe. Oh, lots to get into here with Rashard Lewis, including that run to the 2009 NBA Finals. So many big shots for Rashard along the way, and he breaks down each and every one of them, playing alongside Ido Turkoglu, Dwight Howard. That was a Magic team that kind of started this barrage of three-point shooting back in the day. Also, his basketball journey that took him through the Pacific Northwest, his start in Seattle, and ultimately his decision to come to City Beautiful. Lots of good stuff to get into with Magic big man Rashard Lewis on this edition of Magic Pod Squad.
This is Fonz Wagner of the Orlando Magic.
This is Cole Anthony.
This is Javon Suggs.
This is Paolo Banchero of the Orlando Magic, and you're listening to the Pod Squad.
Hey, welcome everyone to another edition of Magic Pod Squad. Dante Marcatelli, George Galante, and quite frankly, George, one of the greatest Magic players we've ever had. Rashard Lewis, kind enough to join us for Magic Pod Squad. And I tell you what, it is, how great is it being back here? But it is a blast for us to have you back here, Rashard. It feels like old times.
Oh, man, it's always a blast coming back to Orlando because it just brings back so many memories, and all those memories are great memories. So I love this city, you know, because it's one of the best times of my career.
It was one of the.
Looks like he can still play. I'm not buying it. You could play. If I put you, could you give me 15 minutes right now?
I can give you offense, no defense.
That's fine.
No blocking shots. I can give you some corner three pointers or something.
Perfect. What do we need?
That's where the league is going. Come on. Well, let everybody know what you're up to now, Rich. I know last year you were on the sidelines. You were coaching with the Detroit Pistons.
Yep.
You've been in the Big Three since its existence. Yes. What are you up to now?
Pretty much, like you said, I was with first year coaching with the Detroit Pistons last year. Coach Casey brought me on. He drafted me when I played with the Seattle Supersonics and kind of raised me from a young kid into a man. So he asked me to, you know, come out there and help, which I enjoyed it. You know, I feel like it's the next chapter in life for me of being able to still be around the game. And, looking forward to continue to do it, you know, in the future, as well as during the summertime playing the Big Three. Still love to compete. Still love to play basketball at a high level. So I feel like that's kind of like half-court professional basketball. That's how I look at
that. It is half-court.
As an old head, that's still professional to me because you got a lot of talent in it. I mean, it's a lot of guys that play.
Yeah.
And a lot of good coaches.
Be an old head because that makes us super old heads over here. Is that how do you feel like do you,
I
now
do.
That you're retired? Do you
I do.
Feel that way?
I do, but you know, like I said, we're still young in life.
Of course,
just got a long life to live. So I feel old in basketball terms. I guess you can just say in basketball.
So how was the year coaching? That was your first foray into coaching. Mm-hmm. What did you like? What did you not like? Or was there things you didn't expect?
No, I really enjoyed it. I loved it. a lot of people always saying like, it's not too much for you. Now you know, you have a real job and you're gonna be, I'm like, man, this is basketball. Like, basketball to me is not a job.
Right.
You know, it's so much fun and I love it. I don't look at it as a job. And the traveling, you know, I mentally kind of put my mind to a place where, as a player, traveling night in and night out, being at the practices, the meetings and all that. So I did it for 17 years.
True.
It was nothing for me. It was easy for me to go into the season and be mentally prepared for the travel and everything else just because of the fact that I've done it. You know, if I was coming in and never done that type of traveling, then it'll probably be a little different for me. But I was mentally prepared and ready.
You're a little more stiff on the longer flights though now.
Definitely, I am. Definitely that I'm older, but that's when you just got to keep getting up. You stretch them legs out a little bit.
What are the guys nowadays asking you? When they pick your brain and you have conversations with young guys that are coming into the league now, guys are coming in same age as you were, 19, 20, starting their NBA career. What are you telling these guys?
I always tell the guys, you know, you stick with it because I can remember being that young guy, 19, 20 years old, and wanted the success right away. Wanted to be an all-star or score 20 points a night, you know, be on SportsCenter or be a big key to making the playoffs. It don't happen overnight.
Sure.
And that was a big thing that I was saying with a lot of the young guys that was with the Pistons. You know, it was a young team that's rebuilding. Like, you got to stick with it. You know, you're going to have good nights, you're going to have bad nights, but for the most part, you're 19, you're 20 years old. There's a lot of learning and a lot of experience to gain. Everybody's not LeBron James or Kobe Bryant that could come in and have immediate success. A lot of us, it takes time. I'm not saying that you won't be successful your first year, but you'll be a better player down the road in 5 or 6 years playing in the NBA from gaining that experience. So I always tell guys, you know, you're going to have bad weeks, bad days, bad months. Don't beat yourself up over it. You know, be mad that day, but get up tomorrow and continue to work. Continue to get better, and that's how you succeed.
When did that click in, though, for you, Rashard? Because I would imagine that the majority of players that come in, especially the ones, let's say, like, let's take a team like you coached last year in Detroit.
Right.
There's a lot of kids on that team, and I say kids because they're 18, 19 years old. I mean, I'm super old now. That they've been, you know, the best player on their team. I mean, and you went through this as an 18-year-old kid coming out of high school. When does that kick in for a player? Because it's not easy to tell them that.
Right.
I'm sure somebody maybe told you that when you were a rookie. Maybe it was Coach Casey. Maybe it was somebody else. When does that click in for a guy? And does it, I mean, I'm sure it clicks in differently for everybody, but when did it click in for you, say?
Like you said, it does click in different for everybody. Sometimes it could take a year, it could take 2 years, it could take 30 games. But with me, I would say after my first 2 years in the league, going into my third year, I gained a lot of experience. I think more than anything, it's the confidence level. But coming in as a teenager, you know, I was able to mature a little bit more from playing in the summer leagues and, you know, practicing hard. But I would say my third year, because you want to gain that experience on the court playing with the real guys.
Right.
And when you get that experience, the confidence level goes up, everything goes up, and you put the work in during the summer. But by my third year, I felt like I had it figured out. I was still learning, but you know, everything was starting to come to me like this. It was all about winning ball games. And when you're young, it's all about me. I want to be an all-star. I want to get paid the big bucks. I want to get 30 points a night. It's all about, you know, the individual person. But when you figure it out over the years, it's all about the team. It's about us. And when the team has success, the individual has success. So you learn over time that it's not just about that individual person. It's about us as a.
Did you call any of your old coaches back once you became a coach and apologize to them? Like, and say, hey, I'm really sorry. I get it now.
I apologize, but I did definitely get it. You know, being a little bad body language at the end of the bench, wanting minutes, wanting shots. You know, I was just learning. I was a kid. If they would have put me out there, I probably would have been like a deer in headlights. So I think sometimes, like I said, some kids are very talented. They can come in and play right away. But I would say 90% of rookies or guys that get drafted to the NBA, it's a learning process.
Yeah.
It's definitely learning. You still can have success, but it's still a learning process.
Yes, of course.
That's
you know, we think about when he came here in 07, right? You played parts of 4 years with the Magic.
Right.
Looking at it today, and I obviously knew this, but I don't know why I had forgot. You had a whole basketball life before you got here. That's nine years in Seattle.
You're 100%.
That's crazy.
That is a phenomenal career for a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah.
That you had a whole journey.
Yep.
I imagine Ray Allen was one of those guys that pulled you aside. You were his rookie.
Yep.
What I mean, 9 years in Seattle.
Like you said, 9 years in Seattle. And that's when I had my best season when Ray came to the team. I played with Gary Payton for the first 2 years, and then Gary Payton was traded for Ray Allen. And when Ray Allen came to the team, he was one of those guys, you know, we see Jesus Shuttlesworth, not Ray Allen. Uh-huh. You know, we're young guys in the locker room, listen to every story he tells us.
Right.
But it wasn't not the stories he told us. It was the summertime, the work we put in during the summer, working on our bodies and our game. We followed the things he did. He would get to the arena before games, before anybody would get there. By the time us young guys were walking to the arena for the game, he's already in his locker reading a book, mentally preparing himself for the game. And we're like, what are you doing? You're not going to go shoot? He's like, I didn't already did all of that. So we picked up the small things. And he told me to be an all-star in this league, you have to be consistent. Not saying that you're going to play great every night, but when you have a bad night, you have to get back on it the very next, try to get back on it the next game. And that's how you become an all-star. And he was like, what you do outside of the court is how you perform on the court. And he helped me make my first all-star team. So I give a lot of credit to Ray Allen.
That's awesome.
For being a great leader, you know, not only for just myself, but for us as a team, because we was a young team, and he was a great leader.
All right, well, I got to hit you because we know Gary Payton can tell stories, and we know Ray Allen can tell stories. So we don't, in Orlando, we don't know a lot about Ray Allen and Gary Payton. So what give us some good stories that stood out that you can tell on a podcast from those two guys.
Gary Payton's story that stands out, and I tell this story all the time. Of course, I was drafted out of high school, teenager. I'm a kid.
Yeah.
And the year I get drafted, it was a lockout. So right after I got drafted, league locks out. And I don't think we didn't start till January. So once they lift the lockout, we fly into Seattle a week before training camp starts. Me and Jelani McCoy are the rookies. But camp don't start for another week. So the guys, we're just playing pickup basketball games. So our first day to get there, somebody from the staff was picking us up from the hotel, me and Jelani McCoy. To bring us to the facility just to play pickup before camp starts the following week. We get to the facility late. I think we got there like 30 minutes late when they had already started playing pickup, but it was because we got lost. The guy that was driving us ended up taking a wrong turn, and we end up getting there late. So as soon as we walk into the gym, me and Jelani McCoy walk in, they literally plan a full game of pickup. Gary Payton dribbling the ball up the court, stops in the middle of the pickup and started hussing me and Jelani McCoy out. What the blank are y'all doing? Y'all are late. Why y'all not here? We both looked at each other. We pointed to the guy that was driving, like, we're kids. We're young teenagers. We're like, it was his fault. He was like, I don't give a damn. Y'all got to get to the gym. I have my homeboys pick y'all up. And, you know, it's just Gary Payton being Gary Payton.
How about that?
And it scared us because we know we're young teenage kids that just got drafted. But starting to figure Gary out and learn what type of person he was, he's just passionate about the game. Yeah. When he steps in between those lines, he's playing basketball. And we just happened to walk in the building while he was playing basketball.
Yep, that's right.
If we caught him outside of those lines, maybe he would have came at us a little different.
That's right.
Gary Payton in between those lines is all basketball.
Think about those two that you learned from. Then you come here in Orlando, you get a young Dwight Howard, right? You get all the young Jameer Nelson. Mm-hmm. You get how valuable was that?
It was very valuable.
Being a veteran for those guys.
It was very valuable for me because, you know, playing 9 years in Seattle, I learned a lot from sitting back watching my first couple of years to becoming a role player, to becoming one of the main guys in the offense. And when I got to and I was all about winning. My whole game was just win, win, win. It's not about, you know, getting 50 points a night and losing the game. It was just about winning. So when I came to the Orlando Magic, it was obviously, like you said, it was a young team. And my whole thing was winning basketball games. I didn't care about the amount of money I was making or me coming in, being this superstar from the Seattle Supersonics. It was about us. It wasn't about me. That's how I always approach, you know, every game. It's about us. And to be successful, you know, over the years of watching the NBA, like the Spurs, the Lakers, it's about the team to win a championship. It ain't about Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan. You know, it was Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, you know, from Shaq to Rick Fox. It was about the team. So I always felt that as long as I can have my teammates engaged and feel like they're a part of the success, you get the best out of them on the court.
But you were a big reason for that success because of you playing for what the team needed, because it's been well documented, obviously, like Stan talks about it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you were a three for 9 years 10 years, you know, and you played the three and small forward, and that was your thing. And then Stan pulls you into the office one day and says, listen, like, we want to put you at the four.
Right.
And we want, and you, I don't think there was much pushback from you. You're just like, hey, listen, whatever the team needs, we're good. And you guys kind of revolutionized the game a little bit, because now look around. Everybody's got a stretch four, it all goes back to that with you.
That's right. I remember, like you said, when Stan told me he wanted to move me to the four. And I was, you know, and I, like I said, I told him whatever helps, you know, the team win ball games. And I was four because we had Hedo Turkoglu that was playing the three position,
right,
which was the same position I played when I was in Seattle. And I know Turkoglu is a great basketball player. I played against him when he was in Sacramento. I even played against him when Orlando, you know, faced each other. And I know Turkoglu was going to be a big key to us succeeding. So when he said to move to the four, you know, I was all for it, as long as it was success for the team.
Yeah.
I may have took a little bit of backlash by not being that 30-point scorer or what everybody was always looking
for. But we didn't need that from
you. Exactly. It was all about winning. As long as we win basketball games,
that's right,
nobody's talking bad about the Orlando Magic. When you're losing, they try to point the finger. But that's just a part of sports. And it was – and with this organization, the team we had, it was a family. You know, we didn't have guys stabbing each other in the back and then smiling in their face. No, we was a real family, and we played that way on the court.
Yeah.
And I feel like the better relationship you have with guys off the court, coaching staff as well, the better it'll show, the more it'll show on the court.
I always tell Dante, and you may remember it or you may not remember it, it will stick with me forever. The year we went to the finals, mm-hmm, we had a dinner at training camp, and everybody got the handbooks and whatever else, and everybody's sitting around a big table at the dinner. And I don't know if you, and Stan went through each guy.
Yep.
Started, you know, Dwight, Rashard, Hedo, Jameer, and he went all the way down to O'Donnell. Right. No offense, O'Donnell. He went all the way down to O'Donnell, right? This is what we need you to do to win.
Yes.
I need you to do A, B, C, D, and E. Rashard, I need you to do A, B. And everybody to a man just kind of stood, like, and they knew, but like, that's rare. Is it not, Rashard?
Yeah, no, it's very rare. And that's why I really like Stan, not only as a coach, but as a person, because coaches like Stan be straight up with you as a player.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need. You need to tell us our roles.
Yeah.
Because I can be a great defender, rebounder, but I average 12, 13 points with the Sonics. Now I'm coming to the Magic. First thing is on every basketball player mind is scoring.
Yeah.
Now I want to go get 20 points because, you know, you score, you get paid. Mm-hmm. So when Stan tells you your role, look, you're a defender, you're a rebounder, you're a three-point shooter, or you're, you know, whatever your role is. And if you know that as a player, you go out there and play your role. You can't get upset when you're not playing your role if coach takes you out the game for not doing your role. Because, you know, when you have Dwight Howard on the team, you know, Jameer Nelson, Hedo Turkoglu, those are our offensive guys.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the guys we're going to go through offensively. Marcin Gortat, you're the backup center. I need you to rebound. I need you to defend and take the offensive points when it comes to you, when you're open and when you get it.
Right, right.
But for the most part, Dwight Howard, Jameer Nelson, you know, he lets everybody know their role defensively, offensively. And if you don't know your role, come talk to me, because we don't want to have no type of friction or bad body language.
I love that.
Because one person do it, it can trickle down to the team. Especially if you have a guy like Dwight Howard or Hedo Turkoglu, one of the main guys on the team, if they show a bad body language and a bad attitude as the leaders, it trickles down to the team.
That's right.
So you want to make sure that don't happen throughout the team.
I don't know why that dinner sticks with me even to this day, but I just remember leaving there, and I had been to a bunch of dinners like that before with speeches that were similar, but for whatever reason, it was the way you guys were even just – I don't want to say you were locked in at dinner, but you were locked in at dinner, right? And I left there and I went home and I told my wife, and I was like, holy, like, we're going to be damn good.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be good. And she's like, what do you mean? You just had dinner. I'm like, you can just tell by the vibe in the room with the guys. You could just tell.
Right.
Special.
Well, and you're going at this and revolutionizing the game, really, because you got two 6'10 guys who can handle, who can defend, who can pass, who can shoot.
Right.
Now you're leading the league in threes made. Team is leading the league in threes made.
Right, right.
You've got a big that you can play through. Yeah. I mean, that was it. That hadn't been done till that point.
Right. And
the way you guys did it.
And a lot of credit goes to Dwight Howard, because he was obviously one of the best centers in the league at the time. dominant in the paint, as well as a lot of credit goes to the coaching staff, Stan Van Gundy, as well as the staff, because he didn't come in from Miami and coach the way he coached the Miami Heat. He coached to the players that he had on his team.
Right.
He had a Dwight Howard. He had, of course, Hito, Jameer, JJ. He had shooters, but he had such a dominant force in Dwight Howard. He coached the style that would fit best for the type of players he had. And that's what makes great coaches. Not coming in with, say, the Miami Heat culture and try to bring it to the Orlando Magic. Maybe you don't have that Miami Heat culture type players.
Yeah, right. True.
He coached what he had.
Right.
And that's why, you know, those are some of the best coaches. And that's why I still think Stan is one of the best coaches that I've ever played for, because he's always made adjustments. If it was during the game or in the playoffs, whatever it was, or the type of players he had, if it was a trade made, Vince Carter coming to the team, whatever it was, he made adjustment within the organization.
You know, it's interesting. We just had Ryan Anderson on a podcast recently as well, and he said when he first got here, he couldn't do anything right. Stan rode him, and he said, you're laughing because you heard those guys. He said, yeah. Rashard could do no wrong.
He did say that. He's like, yeah, Rashard was his favorite. Yeah, Rashard was his favorite.
Did you feel that way? Did Stan ever get on you? Well, I never heard Stan get on you.
Stan gets on everybody.
Sure he does. Yeah, yeah.
Stan gets on us.
He gets on everybody. You're not doing
but I also never heard him yell at Rashard. You had a special relationship. You either did everything right.
I don't want to say I appreciated
your sacrifice.
Right. I think he appreciated the sacrifice. Yeah. But not only that, no, I'm not a big talkative guy that's going to be screaming and yelling in practice. I live by example. Yeah. Putting the work in, getting there early, staying after practice, getting up shots, or in the weight room to get my body together. Whatever it was, I led by example. And I was always, you know, I always practiced hard. I would always do, you know, whatever coach wanted me to do. Because, like I said, I felt like as one of the captains of the team, if you don't do it, the other guys won't follow behind. So I've always been just that type of person to do, you know, the right thing and try to win ball games that way, especially with a guy like Stan being the coach.
Now, I think about that finals run, right? And I'm sitting here thinking, man, this guy hit a lot of big shots. I mean,
so
big
shots.
With all of us praying, go in, right? Like, huge mega shot. And I went back and looked at it. That 08-09 year, clutch situations, right? You're talking the last 2-3 minutes of a basketball game, close, within 5 points either way. Vince Carter was the most clutch player in the NBA.
Really?
We had that year.
Really?
Who we ended up adding.
Oh, you're talking about 08-09.
08-09.
Vince Carter. Okay,
08-09.
Not on our team.
We ended up adding
right,
next,
right,
year.
Next year.
Right.
Number two in the whole league was Rashard Lewis.
I mean, that doesn't surprise
really?
Me. I can think of six plays off the top of my head that year.
But would you have known to that level?
No.
Like
I can think of the Detroit game winner. I can think of the Boston banker at the buzzer.
Yes.
I can think of the Cleveland game winner on the wing. Right. And then I can think of the Cleveland three-pointer in the corner that tied it, that, oh my God, maybe we didn't even go to the finals if you don't hit that shot. What else? I got them on the top of my head.
But I want to touch on those.
You have notes. I have no notes. This is all in my head.
A couple of them individually. But to be, because we know he hit big shots, but there was a clutch gene about you your whole career,
right.
But something special that year. What is it about being, you know, having the ball in the clutch?
Being the second in the clutch, I had no clue about that stat. I think,
Dante made it up,
win.
By the way. He made the stat up. That's not a real thing.
It helps my story.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
50% from the floor and 44% from three in the clutch. Second best in the NBA.
I don't know. I just had that attitude of I just wanted to win, and I felt like I've always felt like I'm going to make every shot. I'm not a high-volume shooter. I'm not going to go out there and shoot 30 shots just to get 20 points. You know, maybe 12. True. I wasn't a high-volume shooter, but I've always felt like, give me the ball at the end of the game, I'm going to make the shot. You know, even if I would miss the shot, I'd go home and I'd think about that shot all night long. But I just felt like I wanted to win so bad, I'm going to make this
You
shot.
Trust you more
I
than
trust
anybody.
Me, I'm going to make this shot.
Right? That's the mentality.
I think there's a couple of things with that. Like, number one, it's that. And number two, like, your demeanor all the time is very even keel, right? And you don't get too high, you don't get too low. Everything you look on, and you always know Rashard is in control of his emotions, of his play.
I was nervous every time Turk got the ball. Every time he touched the ball, I was a wreck.
Please don't throw this in the fifth row. Please don't throw in the fifth row.
He was so good, and he was so clutch, but you're right. But your demeanor, though.
Jameer, Rashard, Hito were probably three of the best clutch players in the league over that.
No doubt.
Like three, 4 years time span, right?
Right.
But But with you, it was like, it was never a doubt to me that that ball was going to go in if you got it at the end. Yeah. I just knew it was going to go in. I haven't felt that way in a long time, by the way.
It's been a while. It's been a while.
I miss you.
And also on that, during that time, we had such dominant alpha males on the team that even he don't feel like he would make a shot. Jameer,
absolutely.
Dwight Howard. You know, we was just at a point where we had that chemistry and we were so bonded.
Yeah.
We're going to make this shot. You're going to have to beat us. You're not going to come in and just make it. It's going to be an easy win. You got to beat us. You got to take it from us. It's going to go down to the last second for you to beat us.
Well, and Dirk hit big shots too. But and we got video. We're going to roll this in after the fact. I wish we could play.
We're going to roll things
in. We're rolling it after.
We do that now?
I wish you could see it now. We're huge right now.
Oh, wow. I didn't know we'd do that. Right.
But that game one against Cleveland, here you are in the Eastern Conference Finals. You just beat Boston. You just blew them out on their floor. And now you're in the Eastern Conference in Game 7 in Boston. The whole world is expecting LeBron and Kobe.
Yes.
Were they not?
Commercials all year long. The Muffets, Kobe LeBron.
All year.
That's all they wanted to see in the finals.
That's a little chip, I would think, on your shoulder.
It was a big chip on all of our shoulders. We took that personal because we felt like we was one of the best teams in the league in the East at the time, us, Cleveland, as well as Boston. But, you know, they started that early in the season and commercial.
Yeah.
So it was like,
that was like all-star break.
Almost predicted that Lakers versus Cleveland. Yeah. So, you know, we took that person.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
But you go to the end of game one. Now here you are, the big bad Cleveland Cavs, who everybody assumes is going to go. You're on their floor. They lost like 3 games that whole year at home.
Right.
Ball's in your hands with 4 seconds left with a chance to steal game one.
Right.
This is after, by the way, and we had one of our assistant coaches was Steve Hetzel at the time, who was an assistant coach with Cleveland during that team. Yep. And he liked to remind us that that they were up by 20-something points
that
game.
That's
a good point.
Game
Very one. Good point.
And we were getting smoked.
Very good
point. I could just about to say that. Game one, we was excited. Eastern Conference Finals, you know, we in Cleveland. We take the bus ride to the arena to go over for game one. Streets are just filled with people. You know, they booing us as we getting police escort to the arena. So we're like, yo, this is crazy. Like, we're excited.
Right.
First quarter, game starts, ball goes up.
Whap.
It was boom. We was like, first time out, we go to the bench. We down maybe 10, 15 points. And we look at each other. We looking around like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This we just get ourselves into. And Stan's just like, calm down. Everybody just relax. Let's chip away at it. We're not going to get it all back in one play. Just calm down. I think that first time out kind of relaxed everybody. Yeah. Not relaxed. We were still tense and, you know, ready to play.
It's kind of reset.
It was reset.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, it was too fast for us. We reset it, started chipping away at it. And I think we was cut the lead by halftime. I think it was down maybe a couple points.
Yeah.
But I can say that first quarter, it was like, oh, my God.
Had to have been thinking, well, what are we getting ourselves into? You said, but now you fight back, and the game comes down to you with the ball in your hands.
We fight back down to the last second. I remember Coach drawing up a play. You know, I'm feeling good. I started off first half not playing too well, but second half started playing well.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing a lot better. I started getting a little rhythm. And I can remember, you know, like I said, when it comes down to those that end of the game, I want to win. I don't care how we're going to do it, let's win. But I remember Turkaloo passing me that ball on the wing, and I had Verizade that was guarding me. And, I felt like every time a big's on me, I'm going to beat you to the basket. I'm a lot quicker than you. So I tried to drive him to the basket. He played great defense. I can remember kicking it back out to Turkaloo at the top of the key. But I wanted to win, and my instinct was go to get the ball. So I just come running back out to the three-point line and, you know, like kind of waving my hands, like pass it back, and he gives it back to me. Knowing Turkaloo, he don't like to pass the ball a lot. He wants to shoot those times.
Yeah, so. Yes, he does.
He ended up giving it back to me, and I gave Verizade a jab step, and he thought I was going to drive it again, and I just raised up. And when it went through the net, when I say the excitement I had, the chills, the feeling, I think I started pumping my chest. Yeah, I'm looking over to the bench.
Awesome.
You know, everybody is so happy. I mean, just the magnitude of that game, Eastern Conference Finals, game one, on the road, playing against the best team in the NBA, had the best record that year.
That's right.
LeBron James, best player in the league. You know, everything was against us. You know, our back of the
building was insane.
It was insane. It was so the loudest building I've ever played in. The atmosphere was crazy. To steal game one was a big deal.
Is that, do you have that like bookmarked on your phone and then that's how you go to sleep every night? You just have to go real quick before you go to sleep. You're like, hey, let me just watch this 15 seconds real quick. How I would go to sleep, man, every night.
You know, that's a side that I always remember. But not only that, but I think stealing game one is a big key to us getting to the finals. We don't get game one.
Absolutely.
Well, that's what.
I'm sitting here thinking the story that you're telling is the story that Turk wishes he could tell, because in game two,
he should have been shot,
the
hero. Right.
Yes, he makes the it should have been the game winner.
It should have been the game winner.
Right. LeBron makes
that miracle shot. Miracle.
He goes, every year I have to watch this.
And not only that, it was only every year I got to watch it too. On NBA TV, they always showing either the highlight or they showing that game.
Right.
But I think it was like 1.something seconds left. Yeah. It was only like
less than one second.
Tip it in or catch and let it go.
Yeah.
And like I said, I remember this to this day. I'm guarding the guy on the inbounds. As he throws the ball, and the play was, you know, we figured they wanted to try to get a lob tip in or whatever because you don't have time.
Right. Yep.
So we cut the lob off for LeBron to get the tip, but we cut all the paint off. We planned the paint.
Yeah.
They're not getting the tip in. So he somehow runs to the back to the top of the key. And I remember the ball being passed to him, and I'm following the ball. I'm the inbound. I'm guarding the inbounder. Ball goes to him. I'm following the ball, and I'm running to where the ball's going. LeBron catches it. If you go back and watch the replay, Turkaloo's contested it, but you can see me come flying behind Turkaloo.
You're up there trying.
To try to contest it as well.
You tried.
And he shot it. And, you know, we got this game, too. And when it goes in, the arena erupts, and we, kind of looking around like, did that really just happen?
Yes.
We thought we was going up 2-0. We for sure knew we was in the driver's seat of this series. Now it's a whole new ball game.
Yes.
From a 1 second shot from the top of the key.
Yeah, that's garbage.
A miracle shot.
But you
recover. You go back and win game three at home.
Yeah.
And then there was a feeling, George, that I remember and Magic fans felt man, you, game four is almost just as important.
Yeah.
You can't go back up there 2-2.
Right.
You had to get
well. You have
four.
To. You have to hold home court at that
you
point
have to.
Because and you can't get it back.
And
to
it
them.
Goes to you again in the corner with the big shot. End up going overtime and winning. But now you get your number called again. I would think if I'm Cleveland, I'm not letting Rashard beat me.
Right. For some reason, like I said, I think it was down 2 points at the time.
Yeah.
Down one.
No, we were down.
Down one.
Yeah.
Down one.
Down one. Didn't need a three, but went for it.
Oh,
I love it.
Yeah, but I was wide open. I mean, Stan, yeah. Was such a great play. You know, me and Dwight at the elbows, and I think it was screening down. For, I don't know if it's Turkoglu or Jameer coming up. But that was just a decoy screen.
Yeah.
I mean, and I see a lot of teams run this play to this day, and people bring it up. But, you know, after I set that screen, Dwight turns and screen for me. And, you know, I like to post up on that right block. So that right side is one of my best, you know, either shoot the jump hook or I love to turn over the right shoulder. I learned that from Akeem Olajuwon in the Dream Shake. Turn over my right shoulder to shoot the shot, the fadeaway shot. So me turning over my shoulder to shoot that three was almost a money shot for me because I worked on it all the time,
right.
And I post up all the time. So coming off of that right side, catching it and turning over my right shoulder, it was like – and Coach told me, if you're open, let it go.
Yes.
Shoot it. You know, if you're not open, then, you know, go to the basket and, you know, make a play. But if you're open for the three, you have to shoot it. And nobody was on me.
Right.
And I'm turning over my right shoulder, which is a rhythm shot for me, and it was nothing, you know.
Nothing but that.
He made it, and the arena erupted.
Yeah. Erupted.
Oh, my God.
You talk about the arena erupting. Like, talk about the city at that point when we were making, you know, the all the years you were here, really. I mean, just talk about the fan base and the energy
blue
that you
and
would.
White ignite.
Yes.
And that's what was going on in the city of Orlando. It was igniting throughout the playoffs, and it even bigger in the finals. You know, that's what it was all about. We was trying our best to win a championship for the city of Orlando. For the DeVos family, because the energy, I mean, that not only that year, the fans was great, but in the finals, it just went to a whole nother level, man. The city was great. The arena was packed. It was just, it was a good feeling to have in here, and you know, in the Orlando area, especially when we was on a road playing playoff games, we would come back. The fans would be buzzing. They couldn't wait for us to come back off the road. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
I don't think we knew how special it was. So we tried to never take it for granted, but man, it was just a special. I mean, you're lucky in your career to experience it once. You got to go on and win a championship. You got to do it again, which is phenomenal. Right. Down in Miami,
I'm not bitter at all.
Why did it have to be with the Heat?
Okay. Any other team but the Heat? For God's sake, good Lord! All right,
but it seems like you get to the NBA Finals, and then Game One kind of seemed like a little bit of what happened with Game One in Cleveland, right? It kind of maybe the speed of
the final.
But man, you 34-11 and 7
mm-hmm.
in game two for Rashard.
That's pretty good. That doesn't suck.
Yeah, you were on a mission in game two.
I was on a mission to win. That's all I was thinking about was win. We got to win ball games. And I think that first half I played really well.
Yeah.
Especially in the first half. And, you know, after that game one loss, we didn't only lose a close game. We got beat up pretty bad. So, you know, Stan laid into us. We got on film session. But as players, individuals, you know, we got to man up. And I've heard the rumors in the media. We saw all of they're not fit for this. I think Paul Pierce said, like, it's like a Rottweiler versus a Chihuahua. So, you know, we heard it all. And I mean, it didn't hurt our feelings, but we knew we had to bring a different level of play because we're in the finals playing against Kobe Bryant and, you know, the Lakers. So I just – was locked in, came out playing well, shooting the ball very well, and we almost had a chance to win that game.
Yep.
Ended up missing a layup to go to overtime. But I think if we win game two, definitely a totally different series in the finals. Not saying we'll win it all, but it's a different series because during that time it was 2-3-2.
Yeah.
Right.
So we played the two. Say we split 1-1 and we come into Orlando to play three games. And we win the first game at home, of course. I think game four.
That was Derek Fisher's shot.
Derek Fisher hits a crazy shot.
He makes shots all game long.
Right. He was 0 for 5, I think, at that point.
Send it to overtime.
Right.
Even we win that game.
Exactly. Well, you were about to tie the series. You're about to tie the series up. That's right.
And it's kind of back to 0-0, three-game series. So of course, we would still have to go back to LA. But at the same time, you want to be competing, you know. And when Fisher hit that three, I felt like it took a little bit of hair out of us because we didn't play the same way the very next guy.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, it felt like
it kind of did.
It took air out of me and I wasn't playing. Like, I just, I, I just, I, I would, You felt such like it. Oh, man. Yeah. Like, that was one we... Another one we let... Yeah, that was...
Down 2-1 is different. Going down 3-1, you're like...
That's big hole.
I remember that. I remember the timeout for the Courtney Lee, because I was doing sidelines, and I'd have my head in all those timeouts. And I remember him drawing up that play, mm-hmm. and it must have been something you guys worked on a bunch, because yes. I remember seeing the diagram and thinking, holy shit, this could work.
Yeah, right.
This could work. And Hedo says, Courtney keeps telling him, make sure the ball's there. Make sure the ball's there. Make sure it's a good pass.
And his answer, don't worry, bro. I get it there.
Come on, man. I got you.
Come on, man. Just get there. I'll get it. It almost happened. It was a tough shot, but my goodness.
It was a tough shot. It was a great pass, tough shot. I mean, it's just sports. Sometimes it happens. I don't want to say, it's all Courtney Lee's.
No, of course not.
Because shot doesn't determine the outcome of a game. So it's a bunch of little.
But that building was like, I mean, it felt like for a second ball game, right?
Yeah.
And it was that well drawn up.
It was well drawn up. Great play. Mm. Ball just didn't go our way that night.
Nope, it sure did. Well, I think this is awesome. We could reminisce and go down memory lane.
About all kind of stuff now. The Philly series when Dwight gets suspended, we ended up beating them on their court.
Yeah.
Boston game 7 on their court.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it was just one of those years like we fought tooth and nail to win ball games. And
we feel as good as that year was, and you went to the NBA Finals, where would you rank the 09-10 team? They were just as good, weren't they?
That was just as good.
You guys, you get blew through the first
that,
two rounds.
Probably even better.
Yeah.
Right?
I contend we were better the second go around.
It's just sometimes things happen in basketball. Yeah. Right? Getting to the finals, you always want to say that's a better team, because if I say we won a championship, that's a better team.
Right.
But just like, I mean, your team could be stacked. You have one injury to your team, it can mess a whole season up. Even if it's just a role player, like Peaches is a great role player for us.
Yes, that's
Peaches
right.
Peaches get hurt. You know, he's our best defender. He's guarding LeBron James. He's guarding Kobe Bryant. You know, he's guarding all these guys that we need him to guard. One role player gets hurt, it may change the whole season. We may not even make it to the finals. So, you know, your health.
Yeah, chemistry, that's right.
A lot goes into trying to be successful in the NBA.
Was Michael Petras the only guy you played with that gave himself his own nicknames?
MP. And friends.
Playoff Petras. How can I say? Playoff Petras.
Playoff Pete.
He was great, though. He was a big part of it. You're right.
It was. Everybody was a big
It was a
part
great
of it.
Time. It was just an unbelievable time to be here in Central Florida.
Not only for the basketball players and the staff, but for the city.
Absolutely. Orlando.
It was great times. That's why every time I come back, I feel like I'm welcomed with open arms.
Mm-hmm.
Not only by the organization, but by the fans in Orlando. No, that's why I always call this my second home.
Wow. You've gotten to see the Advent Health Training Center.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
Jealous.
It's hard. People ask me, and we'll talk to some former players, and they're like, hey, how's that practice facility you guys have down there? And I'm like, you really don't know until you see it.
Until you see it.
Tell me about
I've been
thought.
Hearing all about it.
Yeah.
But first time seeing it today, and it's great. It's amazing. I mean, it's got to be the best practice facility in the NBA, at least for now. Until 5 years down the road, somebody else go build something else or go see somebody come in and see this facility and try to
copy it.
Yeah, copy it and add on to it. But, you know, like I said, this facility is first class. I mean, I've never seen a heel in a weight room.
Right.
Lap pool as well. You know, it's definitely all the things. These players have no excuses to get better.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
You know, get healthy, get better. You have no excuses.
Now that you're removed a little bit from the game, and your kids were really little when you were here.
Yes.
And now that you're, you know, and we talked about it, that's 14, 15 years ago, which is crazy to think about because for us, it does feel like, right? It feels like yesterday. Like, do you look back? Do you sit the kids down and say, hey, like, check out what dad was back in the day? Like,
I do.
How do they react to that?
They love it, especially when I come back to Orlando, when I bring them back and we go to the games. They see my pictures on the wall, or they always see, you know, the treatment I get when I'm playing, when I'm here in Orlando. They excited about it. And every time I get ready to come back to Orlando, I'm always telling them, yo, I'm about to go to Orlando. I got to do some events or do some charity events, you know, with the Magic. And they know that this is probably my favorite team that I played on throughout my career. Even though I was drafted as a young kid and grew from a boy to a man in Seattle, won a championship in Miami, but this was the best time in my career playing with Orlando Magic. Not only because of the teammates I had, great coaching staff, but like I said, the city of Orlando, you know, they welcome us all with open arms, and
We was treated great.
Wow, such a special time. I show my kids the shots that he
did. So do I.
I hope you show your kid.
I'm going to go watch him tonight again.
Go watch him. It was just...
It's a little embarrassing.
It was an awesome time. And listen, it's 35 years of Magic history.
Yeah.
And we're excited to have you, you know, be in town more, come around more often.
Of course.
Yeah. We need Rashard Lewis around more. How do we get that, Rashard? How do we do that?
I'm one phone call away.
All right.
No, I'm always coming in. But one thing I can say is, I can't wait to see the city get back to that type of basketball, which I think is coming real soon. You know, they have a bright future, and the organization's always working to get good players here and to make them, you know, a playoff team. And I can't wait to see the excitement back in the city of Orlando when they're back in the playoffs, not only the playoffs, but hopefully win the championship.
I love it. There's a buzz coming. People are very excited about this team.
Gotta have patience. Patience is key. You know, like I said, with young guys, nobody's winning a championship 19, 20 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe NCAA tournament, but NBA championship is very tough. So the fans just have to have patience. Just like when I came here that first year, we got better every year. We went from first round, making it to trying to get past Detroit and Boston, ended up getting past them, making it to the finals, but it didn't happen in 1 year. It was a couple of years.
God, it feels like it happened in 1 year, doesn't it?
It was a couple of years. These guys got a lot easier. You got clotheslined by the Pistons for 3 years.
Yeah, that was exactly.
Yeah. You can't do that anymore.
No, the game's
changed a little bit. But yeah. Rashard, this was awesome. Thank you so much, and we look forward to keeping up with you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, thank you. One of our favorites, Rashard Lewis. That'll do it for this edition of Magic Pod Squad.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.